Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Mike Brocky. He is a Google developer expert and a contributor to the Angular CLI, and he and I are both going to be speaking at NG-ATL in Atlanta.org, which is an Angular conference. How are you, sir?
I'm not too bad. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. How long have you been doing JavaScript and Angular? Well, that's two questions, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's two separate questions. JavaScript, I probably started maybe about 5 years ago, and Angular probably about 3 or 4 years. So most of my experience with JavaScript has been with Angular.
But you've been a dev for many, many years. What led you to JavaScript?
I think it was the proliferation of client-side tooling, namely jQuery, that kind of fostered in the idea of being able to do more on the client, and that's what users wanted.
Yeah, because I feel like I've been using JavaScript for, 12 or 13 years, but that JavaScript is not today's JavaScript, you know what I mean? So I feel like it's like an entirely different language, like I shouldn't even say that out loud. You know what I mean? Because I'm wondering if someone might listen and say, oh, well, he's only been working for 5 years. That's basically no time at all.
Absolutely. And I think that speaks to like other information that I did do some JavaScript way back when, but I didn't really think of it as being a JavaScript developer back then, just doing some validation or small things on the client side.
Okay, so you kind of feel the same way. It does seem like it's a new language every few years. I feel like even the JavaScript of today, and of course it is, if you think about ES6 and all that kind of stuff, the entire community reinvents itself every few years.
Of course, with anything that's rapidly changing as new technology comes out, especially with front-end web, there's a lot of change and a lot of fluctuation. It takes a lot of effort to keep up with it.
Now, you have contributed to Angular and specifically to the CLI or the command line interface tool for Angular. Is that something that is required to use if one is going to use Angular?
It's not required, but with any type of tooling, it provides you a level of assistance to get you started faster and take care of some menial tasks and other things that you would otherwise have to do by hand or yourself and learn on your own.
Mm-hmm. So I use NPM and I install it as a global tool, and then I get NG, which is ANG. So I just realized where the NG came from in Angular. And you type NG new and then foo, and then you get an app. Is it generating an app that's entirely out of the box? Like it is a complete app when you type NG new?
Absolutely. So yeah, you globally install it. And then with NG new, you get a new project that you can run. You can test, run end-to-end tests, lint. There's a whole bunch of different tooling associated, more than just a scaffolding tool like something like Yeoman would give you.
Mm-hmm. And is it a best practice? I mean, when you say NG new, is that the only Angular app you'll ever need? What if you already have an existing app?
There's some documentation about getting an app that was created by hand or maybe through some other tooling, maybe a seed project, to get it integrated with the rest of the tooling of the CLI. But predominantly, we strive to get people to use NG new to create a new project because best practices change over time. And we try to keep up with the latest, best practices.
A lot of people that I work with use IDEs. So when they think about making new stuff, they go like file new project, right? File menu, new menu project. And then after the fact, they go file new item, and where an item is any number of things. Is the Angular CLI the file new project of the command line for Angular apps?
For right now, it is. We're looking into doing some refactorings so that it's more of a library and not just a command line interface. But the command line interface will still remain, so you can still do everything you do from the command line, but it would foster in the ability to do things like a file new from an IDE and get the same result.
Is it a generalized scaffolder? Like, can I add other templates? When I guess you say ng, after you've said new, you say ng generate, and then the name of the thing you want to generate?
Correct. So you can generate a number of different items that make sense with inside an Angular application. But the scaffolding logic is something that has been recently redone, and you can do your own custom scaffolds. They're called schematics within there to be able to generate your own different items, whether or not the file format is different or tabs versus spaces or any other tweaks that you want to make based off of your own organization.
Oh, okay. That's cool. So that schematic concept is the generic idea of a template, for lack of a better word, that lets you go ng generate foo, where foo is components or services or classes or whatever.
Exactly. And we give a bunch of those by default. But like I said, if your organization or if your project, you want to use some other different scaffolds or create some things on your own, then you can do that through schematics. Although schematics is a very generic library, that it's not just specific to the Angular CLI.
Oh, okay. It's used for other things?
It was designed that it could be. For right now, the only application I know of it is with the Angular CLI, but it's designed so that it can be used elsewhere.
Oh, okay. And these, do most companies that are like heavy Angular people or heavy Angular companies go and make new schematics? Like, would I make a new scaffold if I, in the course of making a regular app, would I find myself saying, oh yeah, I need to make a new custom module or a new custom scaffold?
The answer right now is no, but it's only because they're pretty new. As far as I know, only about a handful of people are using it. But it was just reintroduced in a recent version. So it's a new thing. But I envision a lot of people taking advantage of that to be able to create their own different thing, their own scaffolds. So whether or not you have the use of something, say, like Bootstrap, that one may have its own constructs that you could add on your own schematics into a particular collection.
Now, what specifically was just introduced? You said that people are not using scaffolds, or not making custom schematics.
The idea of custom scaffolds.
Okay. So I'm looking at the docs, and the docs uses the term scaffold, and then I feel like we're interchanging scaffold and schematic. Is that the same idea?
They are the same idea. So the docs are lagging behind with the development and the introduction of the concept. So that's kind of like the effort that's going on right now, is to update the docs.
Well, that brings up an interesting question, kind of, and this is a little bit of a loaded question, so I hope you understand, no disrespect intended, but it seems like JavaScript is moving so fast that if I were going to bet my entire company on it, I'm betting my company on a bunch of stuff that has, you know, 0.whatever as their version number, and that can make me sometimes a little bit afraid. Like, should I count on this? How mature, I mean, you know, Angular is pretty mature. How mature is the CLI?
The CLI itself is pretty mature. We went beta, I think, about a year and a half ago, and live at least a year ago. I think it was about when it went live. So it's very stable. We have a large series of tests that we've run, not only testing the CLI, but also the projects it generates as well for end-to-end testing. The CLI itself is pretty stable. Schematics has been live, and people are using schematics as of the previous version, 1.4. It's already baked in.
But when I go looking, though, like, for example, I find, if I go look for Angular CLI, if I go and Google with Bing for Angular CLI, I'll find like stuff that looks suspicious, like ngcli.github. It has like the logo, and it says command line interface for Angular apps, but then it says 0.0.7. So then I think to myself, well, that's probably not real. So then I started angular.io and go from there. Are there other competing CLIs, or just people who've decided that theirs is a CLI?
I think the one that you're mentioning was a project that was started independently for AngularJS, which would be anything Angular related with a version of 1. Star. Whereas the Angular CLI, the official one that we work on, is for Angular projects for version 2 and later.
So that's really interesting. Maybe you could take a moment and explain that, because you just said AngularJS, and I felt like there was an implied version number. And then you said Angular, and that implied that that was a different version number.
Yes, so that's the messaging and the nomenclature that the team is trying to use, that we're trying to get community adoption with, that AngularJS is anything with Angular 1 or version 1.x, and Angular is the name to be used with anything Angular 2 or greater. Whereas the version numbers with anything beyond 2 is almost irrelevant or trying to become irrelevant, and it's just Angular.
Okay. So then the Angular CLI, which is at cli.angular.io, it's versioned at 1.0, but it generates Angular 2 or Angular stuff.
Correct. Being that tooling tends to lag a little bit behind the main products with just about anything. Our version numbers haven't been aligned, at least not as of yet. I see that possibly happen in the future, but it's not a priority.
Okay. When I go and have multiple Angular projects on my system, let's say I'm working on two or three projects for two or three different companies, might I have different versions of the Angular CLI? And do I tie that to the project, or do I have one global version?
So as each project is generated, there's a local version, a local dependency of the Angular CLI that gets generated and installed. And what the global version will do is, by itself, it will be needed for creating new projects. But at the same time, if you run the global by just typing ng, it will defer the execution to the local. So it will work with multiple versions.
Oh, that's clever. Okay, so that it's scoped. So if I have a local Angular CLI, or maybe I'm even working in the CLI myself, is that the same as npm link, where I type ng and I make sure that I'm... Even though if I might accidentally call the global one, it will find the local one and use that?
It's a similar concept, yes, that it will defer to the local.
Okay, cool. So it doesn't sound like it's too hard to use, and it does the right thing, and it's quite smart.
We aim to make it as smart as we can.
You're quite modest. What do you think about CLIs in general? Because I feel like the first time... Like, I was an old Linux person 20 plus years ago, but I feel like when development tools that did stuff like the Angular CLI kind of started, the first time I really saw that with Rails, where Rails came out, and then there was this suddenly an opinionated command line, right? Not a tool like awk and sed, not a command line like the Unix, you know, GNU tools that we're used to using, but the first time an opinionated generator came out, I thought was Rails. And then Angular CLI is kind of inspired by the Ember CLI, and now it seems like everybody has a CLI.
I think that, like I said, tooling tends to lag behind the actual development of whatever tooling or the tool is supporting. Mm-hmm. But by making something with a command line, there's no GUI, less user experience to worry about. Although there's still user experience with commands and shortcuts and what have you within there. But it allows for more rapid development, especially with environments where you're using the command line anyway. People who are doing JavaScript are on the command line anyway to do npm installs and to update dependencies and run their tests and do a bunch of other things as well. So to have a command line there, or command line tooling right there at your fingertips in the tools you're already using, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And do you ever get in trouble with the opinionatedness of them, the fact that they want things to look a certain way, or is it the fact that I can modify those scaffolds or those schematics that means that there's really no issue there?
So prior to schematics, there was really no good way to customize what was being outputted from the scaffolding or the generator. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the highly requested features. So hence schematics was born. But whatever's being generated, there was a lot of feedback, some positive, some negative.
Sure.
But yeah, everybody wants their own different flavor within there. And a lot of the previous command line interfaces that came out, you mentioned Rails and Ember, both work off of convention-based libraries.
right.
Both Rails and Nipper, where the Angular ecosystem is not really convention-based, it's configuration-based. So the mentality that I took with when I got involved with the project was to say, all right, the convention will be the style guide. And that's what most people develop their applications towards, and that's what we will try to follow with the CLI.
Okay, that makes sense. But there is a config schema, though, right? You can express the things that that matter to you as an Angular developer?
Yes, we started to provide some customization. So with an Angular component, if you wanted to, say, have your styles or your templates in line in this single TypeScript file, then you can specify that either at the command line or via configuration file.
Okay, and is that something that has smart defaults? Like, I don't have to, I'm wondering how much I have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, everything has its own defaults. It'll all work out of the box, but then you can customize and tweak your configuration file as you see fit.
Mm-hmm. When I go, let me back up then. So popping off the stack, when I start out and I decide I'm going to do an Angular application, this is the recommended way. And I go and say ng new and start making my project. When I type ng serve, that's being served by node.exe. Is it the same? Is anything special happening when I type ng serve?
Well, of course, a lot of things are happening in order to get modern tooling to run in current browsers. So projects created with the Angular CLI are built off of TypeScript. And TypeScript doesn't run in browsers. So the compilation steps needed for that, and also if you're using a CSS preprocessor, that logic needs to be run as part of the build process prior to the application being served.
Ah, okay. So then ng serve implies a build step.
Correct. There is an ng build command as well, which is more so, hey, prepare what I've developed for release, whereas ng serve spins up a local development server to allow you to do like a live reload, write some code, see some code, iterations.
That's cool. And I understand that there's testing and also end-to-end testing, E2E?
Correct. So obviously you can write your unit tests, which is what ng test will execute for you, as well as the end-to-end test. So basically, grab a steering wheel from the browser and drive your application, from beginning to end or whatever processes you want to run through to test live in the browser or multiple browrsers.
When I say ng serve, is that a pipeline, like a build pipeline that I can modify and add? I could do testing before I served, or I can do whatever I want at that point?
Those would be separate commands, so you can serve the application to do your own execution of it, or run your tests separately.
What if I wanted something that wasn't Node in the back end? If I said ng serve and I was going to have, I don't know, .NET or Groovy on Grails or some other thing, so I'm using Angular on the front end, but not making an opinion about the back end.
Now, the idea of running Node on the back end, when you say that, to clarify, it's not necessarily running a Node or Express application. It's actually a Webpack server that's currently running.
Ah, okay. So that's good information. Server. Yeah.
But if you wanted to customize to run within a different environment, what I've seen people doing is to jump out of the box of what's currently there is to run your build in a watch mode. So it'll dump those files to disk and you can serve your application as you currently do with your existing backend. Or potentially set up a proxy configuration to be able to pass that traffic to another server.
Okay, so I'm trying to parse this. You said it's running a Webpack server. So Webpack is a bundler. It's a dependency management. It's modules. It's all that stuff. It's a client side builder that preps what you're going to put into production. Is that correct?
That is correct.
But does Webpack also serve CSS files when asked? Is it a web server? Does it run libuv?
I'm not familiar with libuv.
The thing under Node, does it like is Webpack listening on HTTP? Because when I'm saying when you type ng serve, is it firing up node server.js and then listening on a port?
No, Webpack dev server may inside the under the hood be doing that. I've never looked into that code.
Okay. But if I'm asking dumb questions, I have to apologize.
No, you're fine. The Webpack dev server is a development web server provided by Webpack that will run all of its bundling and everything within there in a watch mode to be able to run essentially file watches on your source code, compile it or transpile it in memory and serve it out of memory.
All right. That is my confusion. So Webpack, Webpack is the bundler. Webpack dev server is a separate project. It's a thing that supports Webpack and the Webpack middleware.
Correct.
And that allows it to then, for the purposes of just development, serves them from memory, serves all the Webpack assets from memory.
Correct.
Okay. That was my confusion. Yes. So I conflated Webpack and the Webpack dev server. And, you know, perhaps the Webpack dev server uses Node and LibUV underneath it. Doesn't matter. But it says, like, what I'm hearing you say is that if you have a Webpack focused development pipeline, Angular, CLI, Webpack, and the Webpack dev server all work great together and they are best practices.
For right now, yes.
The nice thing is going to change tomorrow.
Everything with JavaScript changes, and if 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years,
at the time of this
may not be the answer.
Because you're I don't know if you're being cagey or if you're just being, you know, correct in the sense of like, yes, at the time that Mike and I recorded this, it is correct. But this is, you know, things may have changed by the time you heard this podcast.
Things always change. But that's the nice thing about the way the CLI is put together right now, mm-hmm. is that you don't need to worry about it. You run the command ng-serve and all of that logic of, all right, yes, it will run a Webpack configuration through Webpack mm-hmm. and start the Webpack dev server for you is all transparent to you. You just run ng-serve and your application is automatically running.
Okay, so there you go. So let's pop back on the stack. Once I've installed the Angular CLI, are you getting Webpack for me in the Webpack dev server? How much work is being done for me? Are you really hiding all the yucky bits that I don't want to worry about?
Of course. That's the main reason I got involved with this project is that modern web development is very complicated and that there's a lot of different things you need to learn. And if you can take that scary list of, say, 15, 20 different things that somebody needs to learn and whittle it down to 4 or 5, it makes it more accessible and more consumable to people who may not be fully invested into front-end web development.
That's cool. So that is the essence of what Angular CLI and what you yourself are trying to do.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, and you've actually got webinars online. If people go and search for Mike, last name is Brocchi, not broccoli, but Brocchi. You've got webinars and you've got talks that you've given on using the CLI. But one of your particular ones that I like is you did a live webinar on YouTube on Angular CLI. And basically in 35 minutes, you break it all down.
I've done a few. I've done a few talks at conferences, but that's the nice thing, like I said, about the tool is that it kind of sells itself. And I've been fortunate enough at some conferences and some webinars to be able to just show it and kind of open people's eyes to other ways of doing their tooling.
Mm-hmm. And is Angular and Angular CLI supportive of other things if I'm saying the wrong thing, I apologize. Like when you say a component, or is that a web component or is it an Angular component? And what if I want to use web components?
Again, at the time of this recording, they are separate things. Mm-hmm. But conceptually, they're very similar in that an Angular component right now, it works in the Angular ecosystem. But actually, last week at Angular Mix, there was an announcement about Angular Elements, which is a way of taking an Angular component and to compile it out into a raw web component. And that's still experimental at this time. So the idea would be that you would create something, whether or not, say you created a calendar component that works within your Angular application, but you could compile it in a way and render it out to be a raw web component that could be consumable through raw JavaScript without having the full Angular runtime, or potentially use it in other ecosystems, whether or not is React, Vue, Ember, Polymer, any of the other web frameworks out there.
Okay. If you say without the Angular runtime, what if can I guess I can mix and match, right? If I'm wondering if I want that or not. It's hard to make those kind of decisions.
Of course it is, but if you're in an environment or an organization that is using multiple technologies and you create a widget that is useful within your application, but then you can share it to another part of your organization that is using a different technology, that gives you a lot of power to be able to do a lot of different things.
Okay. Is there a way to tell the Angular CLI the different like things that I have already picked or the different versions of stuff I've already picked so it doesn't generate something that would be incompatible? Or do I not need to worry about that?
It should all be, it's all as of right now based off of the project that gets generated initially.
Ah, right.
And those will all be compatible, but as you'll continue to upgrade. But that brings up an idea that is in our future plans that have a command of, say, I don't know the exact naming, but if, say, you run ng upgrade or ng update, that would update some of the dependencies upon within your application, but also be able to apply scripts to your application to manage any breaking changes that were there to make those changes automatically for you.
That would be a really cool feature. I think that when one makes a generator, the first version is like, hey, I made this thing. I generated some stuff. That's cool. The next step is to make that generator, maybe for lack of a better word, re-entrant, where I could modify code that has already been generated. I could give it an understanding of what has already been generated, and it would then be contextually re-entrant and do the right thing based on things that it's seen that I have already done. And it wouldn't necessarily torch my generated code.
Very true. And I think that a lot of those types of toolings will be coming in the future, thanks to the power of TypeScript, by being able to look into an application and get metadata out of your application to see exactly what's there and where to make those specific changes.
Would you say that is Angular CLI something that has first timers friendly issues? Could I go in there as a new person in open source and maybe find issues that are, you know, help wanted or set aside for people who might be a good first issue for them to get involved in open source?
Absolutely. We have a label that we put on those types of issues. Some are easier than others. Some as simple as like a single character typo, even at times I'll end up tweeting out about.
Oh, nice.
Just to kind of gain some exposure and then help people walk through getting the first commit in or what have you, and try to favor people who don't have any commits or contributions yet to kind of get them involved in the ecosystem.
That's cool. It looks like you've got not only help wanted as a label, but you also have effort, which I think is pretty cool, where you have easy like hours or medium like days or hard like weeks or months, which I think is a clever way to express effort.
I think that's helpful for anybody who's looking to get involved, as well as from a management of, all right, what do we want to try and tackle for a future release and how much effort's required on any particular issue?
Yeah, yeah. Like I just went, this is actually quite a lovely labeling system you have here. I just went over to to Angular CLI and I went to the labels and I said, I want issues that are easy, where there's help wanted. And then additionally, I'm seeing priority like and severity. So here's one that is easy in hours. People can jump in anytime. It's definitely required, like people want it. But it has severity 1, which makes it confusing but not blocking, versus severity 2, which is inconvenient. That's quite a nice way to express things.
Yeah, we try to triage our issues regularly so that we know what the community needs. But if you're out there searching, does that mean we may see a pull request from you in the future?
You know, I might just change the spelling error and then declare that I'm an Angular CLI developer. But no, I'm still learning. I'm still learning just like our listeners are learning. And I want to be able to explore and encourage people to do their first pull request. So I like that you have a friendly project for that.
I think GitHub recently announced something where it's actually integrated into the GitHub platform of a specific label that we may be switching to for those.
They did. There's been lots of talk in this space, and Kent Dodds and I did First Timers Only, and then Charlotte did Your First PR, and then now GitHub, it looks like they're standardizing on one, and I think that anything that gets people excited about open source and makes a standard and easy way for someone to find, you know, new and you know, reasonably chunked bits of work to go and get involved and do their first pull requests, I think is a positive thing.
Absolutely. That's how I got first involved with the project, was just going and grabbing an issue.
Really?
Was not tagged at the time because the project was relatively new. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I grabbed an issue and started working on it, and it grew into what is now a job.
Was it hard to, like a job, like paid job?
Yes. So that's how I'm currently working on the Angular team as a contractor right now.
Nice. So it actually can turn in, open source can turn into a full-time gig.
Absolutely.
That is pretty slick. That seems like that's almost another show right there, to explain to people how to make open source your first time, your first big contract. Is that something that you, that it was luck-based or sticking to it-based? Or like, what was the essence of the thing that, that turned it into a, from a hobby to a full-time contract? Like right, you know what I mean? Like right time, right place?
I think it was a combination of the two. Mm. The right time, right place, right project, community desire. And yeah, I think it was just like a perfect storm of situations that has led to where I am now.
That's fantastic. Congratulations to you. And where can people go and see your videos and learn about the stuff that you're working on?
I have yet to put together a blog or any type of site about me. I typically just communicate mostly online through Twitter. Uh-huh. My Twitter handle is Brocco, B-R-O-C-C-O, a nickname that I gained in college and have kind of stuck with since then.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can talk to Mike at Brocco and talk about Angular, and he'll point you to some of his great videos and the work that they're doing on the Angular CLI. Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.